Oh, how many APJ listeners do we have in the house? Anyone? No? Oh, yeah. Okay. It's going to take you a while to, like, reconcile. I know that voice. I have no idea who that guy is on the stage, but he sounds familiar, and he doesn't look familiar, and I know what that's like. Every church I go to is like that. So thank you for listening. Appreciate it. Yeah, we're going to talk about parenting in the digital age tonight, and as we do, how many of you have ever vacationed or traveled through the North Shore of Minnesota, north of Duluth? Anybody been up north of Duluth in the North Shore? All right, well, that's where our evening is going to begin, in the North Shore. It's the area on the north half of Minnesota along Lake Superior. From Duluth to the Canadian border, there's 150 miles of shoreline, and it features giant cliffs, massive rock formations, and these refrigerator-sized boulders everywhere, just scattered all over in the forest. It's amazing. To the east, as you look out over the Great Lake, it looks like a sea. It looks like an ocean. I mean, you can't see the other side. So it's this beautiful place where these cliffs and these waterfalls meet this endless ocean of water, it seems. It was in the middle of this majestic landscape, high on one hill, that our family ended one of our summers with a family vacation. We got together, and before our son went off to college, and we were like, "Hey, let's spend one final vacation together before everybody goes their own ways." And on the North Shore, we found this place. It was about 150 to 300 yards away from a huge waterfall. We found this cabin up in the hills. It was a beautiful spot. It was a gorgeous, loud, thundering, 25-foot-tall waterfall. It's hard to tell in that picture, but it was this tight cascade of water dropping down into a bull pond, maybe 80 feet across or so. That's my daughter swimming across. Down in the pond, the dark basalt walls sort of horseshoe around, and then there's a river on the other side of the falls, and the pool is made of dark stone, and the water is kind of tinged with iron ore. So it's an iron mines in the area. So it's kind of a reddish water. And so it looks almost ink black in the shade. Over the pond, opposite of the falls, there was a little gnarled tree growing up out of the boulders. You can kind of see it growing up out of those huge boulders. And there, this summer morning, as the sun was coming out, we just spent our day down in this area swinging on the rope swing and swimming through this basalt pond. But as the sun came out, the day grew warmer and warmer. And at the time, our oldest son explored the place more fully and returned with enough mustered up courage to make a bold request of mom and dad. "Mom and dad, let me jump off the 25-foot waterfall." Okay, now how many of you let your son jump off a 25-foot waterfall into ink black water with boulders all over the place? We're like, "No, there's no way." My wife and I looked at each other, we looked at the falls, we looked at the rock face that bulged out, and we said, "No way, you'll break your neck. It's way too dangerous. We've never been here before." And so at this point, we don't know what dangers lurk under the water. So he went off, and our oldest son, who was 15 at the time, went and just jumped in 5-10 feet off the side rocks into the water. An hour later, at the high, the heat came out about high noon, so it started to get warmer and warmer. And at high noon, three guys appeared suddenly at the top of this 25-foot waterfall, road workers scuffed with asphalt. They stripped down to their shorts, and the first man walked up to the edge of the waterfall and launched himself off the cliff into the water, feet first. And then another guy just followed him, and then another guy just followed him, and they went back up, and then they did it again. And these guys, it looked like they had been doing this for years. They'd probably been doing this for years. You know, they probably grew up in the area and knew where this little hidden falls was and knew how to cool off in the middle of the day. Well, all the momentum now and all of the evidence has now clearly swung in the direction of who? My 15-year-old son, right? So he returns to repeat his request. "Let me jump off of the 25-foot waterfall." And so I said, "Okay, if you want to jump off this waterfall, I had this sense that there was a sermon illustration brewing in this moment. It's the only time it's ever happened in my life. I knew as it was unfolding that this was gonna be an illustration I would use in Texas in 2021, years later. I knew it, I just had this sense. And so I said, I'll let you jump off the 25-foot waterfall under one condition. We're not going to film it. I'm not gonna film it on my phone, Mom's not gonna film it on her phone, and we're not gonna use your phone to film it. And what do you think he did? He threw his hands up in the air and he said, well then, what is the point? What would be the point of jumping off a 25-foot waterfall if it wasn't recorded? Now, was I simply emotionally torturing my son? That was probably part of it was in there. Yes, I would have to admit that part of that was true. Now, in itself, you know, our social media age, this sharenting, this constant sharenting is not always wrong, but what happens is our sharenting now is just a prime motivation for why we do what we do in the first place. That's what we have to reckon with. Not thinking about why we are doing what we're doing. We just instinctively do it. Now, because you're all wondering whether we let him do this, the answer is yes. We let him jump off the 25-foot waterfalls. Yes, he lived. Yes, we recorded it. That's how you parent teens. You make concessions. Like, no, and hard no, and then concession. You know, it drives parents crazy, right? That's why we have gray hair. And I think we have video of it. Do we have video of it? There it is. There it is. So now we made the concession. We said, okay, we'll film it and you can share it, but you have to give us your phone and you can't share this video with your friends until we get home from vacation. So what we did is it was an opportunity for us to take the phone away for 3 days and let him really detach from the digital world. So it was a win-win situation. Then we got the video and he loved doing it and it was a fun memory. Now, there's three backstories that I want to touch on when it comes to this video and this situation. The first one is there's a technological backstory to this waterfall moment, because once upon a time in social media, we could share things that we had accomplished previously. You might remember this, you know? You'd be at home at your computer and you'd remember, oh yes, I have this digital camera and we took a family trip or we were at this party or function and now days or weeks later, I'm gonna take that digital file from that camera and share it in Facebook. You know, there used to be this long process involved in sharing. That's gone. That is gone. Now, while you are on vacation, you can think about what you're going to stage and shoot and share immediately with the people who follow you, right? In that very moment. So social media turns our lives into a stage. We're thinking of what we can stage and shoot and share immediately. Right? And so the people around us become actors and actresses. We become the director and the producer, even the starring actor and the stuntman if we want to, in our social media lives that we can share immediately. So social media and the smartphone camera and mobile web and real-time sharing have all conditioned us in our behaviors now. We're always thinking of how do I frame this for the camera, right? We all do that. Secondly, there's a social backstory to this waterfall moment, because in high school, when I was growing up, you know, popularity contests happened 8 a.m. to 3 p.m., Monday to Friday, 9 months out of the year. You know, like the safest place to get away from peer pressure was on family vacation. And now because of the smartphone, the peer pressure, the peer expectations, the sharing with peers now goes into the family vacations. Right? That's new. That's different. There's now a 24/7, 365 popularity contest that our teens are going to feel and tweens are going to feel with their peers. That's unique. Third, there's a parental backstory to this waterfall moment, because in that moment, I knew there was a sermon illustration brewing in that moment, but I also knew that my son's behavior was exposing something about how I parented him. Because for the last 10 years of his life, he had been an actor in front of dad's iPhone. Okay, it's called sharenting, a term for parents who have shared lots of things about their children online over the years. We posted their birth photos, we shared their baby pictures, their first steps, their first smile, their first words, first games, first performances, first this, first that, right? They've all been documented to be shared on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter. So when my son, in that moment, wanted to be filmed when he jumped off the waterfall, I knew that that was exposing something in me. I had habituated him. I had conditioned him to think of his life as being one that was being played out before a screen in the eyes of others. Now, enough about parenting guilt, because tonight we've gathered to pick on teens and tweens. That's why we're here, right? And tonight we're going to focus on the habits of a generation between the ages of 9 and 26. This is a generation now labeled post-millennial, or Gen Z, or iGen. I'm going to use the term iGen. iGen. So between the ages of 9 and 26, pretty broad spectrum. iGen is the label given to those born between 1995 and 2012. So 74 million Americans, roughly 24% of our population. It's the most diverse generation in American history. It is also the most digitally connected generation ever. iGeners were born after the internet was commercialized in 1995. They have no pre-internet memories. They were born into the age of the commercial web, and each of them will enter adolescence in the smartphone age. So that's what kind of designates the iGen age group. They are digital natives, and many of their parents are digital immigrants. Okay? And that's part of the tension, right, that we feel. Gene Twenge, a psychologist at San Diego State University, wrote the most systematic study of iGen, a book titled iGen, Why Today's Super Connected Kids Are Growing Up Less Rebellious, More Tolerant, Less Happy, and Completely Unprepared for Adulthood. That's the title of the book. Gene Twenge, iGen, if you want to jot that down. If Tom Hanks represented a generation in the movie Big of children who were impatient for adulthood, iGen is the opposite. Teens are postponing adulthood. Twenge's extensive study can be summarized in three words: iGeners are safe. They're safe. They are the first generation to grow up with active shooter drills at school since kindergarten. They are the most protected generation by parents. By preference, they are the most self-cloistered generation of teens. Taking all the evidence together, even prior to the pandemic, iGen teens were more likely to be homebodies. Compared to previous generations, iGen teenagers are statistically less likely to go to parties, to go on dates, to get their driver's licenses, to drink alcohol, to smoke tobacco, to ride in a car without a seatbelt, or to experiment with sex. Now, many of these trends are good, and we should celebrate the turning away from foolish behavior. But as Twenge says, taken together, these trends offer a portrait of behavior that mark a generation plagued by delayed adulthood and prolonged adolescence. Delayed adulthood and prolonged adolescence. In sum, iGen is marked by four things. Number one, iGeners are smartphone natives. Okay, the average age for a child getting their first smartphone in the US is now 10.3 years old, and that number is steadily declining. Many of those phones are hand-me-downs from mom and dad. Over 90% of teens today have smartphones. Over 90% of teens have smartphones. They are smartphone natives, they are quick with thumbs, and confident navigating the online world. Number two, iGeners are most likely to be at home and online. Even prior to the virus, iGeners spent less time working jobs, volunteering, engaging in student activities, and doing homework. The result is they've already been spending massive amounts of time at home and online. And unless forced off, they're never offline in many cases, pushed back to their devices by the ubiquity of smartphones in the lives of their peers. Okay, their peers are always online, therefore, they should always be online. They feel that pressure to be online. Number three, iGeners are secularizing. Among iGen, about one in four do not attend a religious service or practice any form of private spirituality. iGeners are more likely than any generation before them to be raised by religiously unaffiliated parents. Number four, most importantly, number four, iGeners are lonely and depressed. By far, the most concerning takeaways from Twenge's research and confirmed by others is the spike in teen depression. Between 2012 and 2015, in just 3 years, depression among boys rose 21% and depression among girls rose 50%. This is between 2012 and 2015. These upticks were equally reflected in suicide rates. Quote, this is Twinge. After declining during the 1990s and stabilizing in the 2000s, the suicide rate for teens has risen again. 46% more 15 to 19-year-olds committed suicide in 2015 than in 2007, and two and a half times more 12 to 14-year-old girls killed themselves. It is the paradox of iGen, she writes, an optimism and self-confidence online that covers a deep vulnerability, even depression in real life. Going so far as to say, quote, it is not an exaggeration to describe iGen as being on the brink of the worst mental health crisis in decades. And much of this deterioration can be traced to their phone habits. That was based on stats up to 2015 when she wrote her book. It has since worsened. Last fall, Twinge posted more recent depression rates numbers tabulated by the U.S. government. Remember, this is all pre-pandemic. Now, just to 2019, these stats are going again through the roof. Depression among U.S. teen girls doubled from 2009 to 2019 and was up 74% among teen boys. So why? Why this spike? Was it perhaps triggered economically by the Great Recession? Twinge asks. No, the spike in teen depression coincides with an upward spike in the U.S. economy. So then is teen depression the result of rising academic pressure? Again, she says no. Academic expectations are largely unchanged. So what did change in teens' lives over this time period when depression increased so much? In 2009, only about half used social media every day. Now about 85% do. In 2009, most did not own a smartphone. Now about 95% do. So even prior to the pandemic, teens in this country faced a depression spike, especially teen girls. That's who are really bearing the brunt of this. And those tracking the trends in this generation are trying to understand this spike and the connection it has to smartphone access and ubiquitous social media among their peers. Teens are never offline, and this inundation of digital media has proven itself, now for many years, unable to deliver the happiness it implicitly promises our kids. It doesn't. It's very sobering. And that's what we need to talk through tonight. Like, okay, now what do we do about this? So let me make two qualifications before we dive into the details. And that is, first, I'm not a parenting guru, okay? I did not aspire to be a parenting guru. I am not ever going to be a parenting guru, okay? I am a journalist. I am intrigued by technology and media, and I parent three teenagers. Well, one's almost not a teenager, so almost back to two. But trying to serve my teenage kids led me to think about my own social media habits, and that's why I wrote 12 Ways Your Phone is Changing You. Okay, that's me writing a book up to me. Like, dad's got to figure this stuff out for dad before I try to help my teenagers with it. So you could retitle that book, 12 Ways Tony Ranke's Phone Was Changing Him and What He Did About It. You know, so that's what the book is about. And so I wrote this book, and as a result, people started looking to me for parenting advice. And I was like, there's no parenting advice in that book, and I never intended to write a book on parenting. But my friends started asking me, like, hey, how would you parent differently now you know what you know about smartphones? So I kind of got backed into a corner. I put together a list of things I would suggest, and then that kind of became a blog post, and people, yeah, and now I'm sitting here. So I'm not a parenting guru, okay? That's what I'm trying to say. Second, and I'm sure you already understand this, that good parenting isn't about plug-and-play principles that I transfer to you and then you plug into your home, right? Parent-to-parent learning is about inspiration and adaptation. Inspiration and adaptation. You hear new ideas from me, and I hope that you're inspired and motivated to do things in your own home, but you will always need to fit new ideas to the personal needs of your particular children. Okay, very important. So as I talk, listen for the spirit of the principle. Don't try to just take the explicit application of the principle and just plug it at home. Does that make sense? I hope so. Nobody said yes, but I'm assuming you understand that. All right. All right, we're going to look at 10 practical suggestions on how to parent in the digital age. This is going to be very practical. One of the reasons why I do this is, like, as a dad, I watched a lot of these kind of presentations where you have somebody stand on stage and talk to parents about, and it was never very practical. It's like, give me apps. Like, what services are out there? Like, how do we put together a smartphone contract with our kids? And, like, I could never find a workshop that was really practical. And so I was like, I put together a list of 10 things, and they're pretty practical. And so this is what I want to share with you tonight. And we're going to start with number one: if your kid has a smartphone, keep the letdown fresh. Number one, if your child has a smartphone, keep the letdown fresh. Okay? Journalist Nancy Jo Sales wrote a fascinating and frightening book titled American Girls: Social Media and the Secret Lives of Teenagers. There she recounts one conversation. This is a conversation she had as she was researching her book on how teenage girls use social media. Quote, "Social media is destroying our lives," one 14-year-old girl told Sales. "Social media is destroying our lives. So why don't you ditch your smartphone and go offline?" said the researcher. The teen, startled by the suggestion and running some quick mental calculations, replied, "Because then we would have no life." Catch that? 14-year-old girl says, the social media is ruining our lives. The researcher says, well, why don't you just ditch the smartphone? Because then we wouldn't have a life. Social media says, come to me to find the fullness of life, and it will cost you your life. That is haunting. And that's what we're dealing with. We're dealing with false promises that our kids are hearing implicitly or explicitly. So teens really, really, really want phones. When it comes to phones, their affections will come alive. They're grasping, grabbing. Our kids will load into the phone all their hopes and their dreams of happiness and peer connection. And social media is where teens look for their life. And what does it cost them? Their lives. It promises joy. It takes away their joy. We as parents can come along and unmask that and show it's not going to bring you the happiness you're seeking. If you look for your joy in social media, it will not deliver. Being online, being seen by your peers 24/7, 365, will not give you life. It will cost you your life. Part of the role of parents is to keep this reality fresh. This is one of the great gifts you can give your son or daughter in this age, is to help them see what idols in their lives don't deliver what they're telling them. Okay? Idols come to us and say, I'm going to make you happy if you do this, if you have this. It never satisfies, right? And so we as parents come along spiritually with our kids and say, why doesn't it fulfill you? And we keep that letdown fresh. Number two, delay smartphones at least until you understand how teens use them. Number two, delay smartphones at least until you understand how teens use them. Once you introduce your child to a mobile connected smartphone with texting and an app like Snapchat, parental controls are virtually futile. Again, in her book, Nancy Jo Sales investigates the troubling phenomenon of girls who receive unsolicited nude selfies from boys in texts, often as a first step of a boy showing interest in a girl. And boys often ask the girls for nudes in return. Okay? There's going to be some awkward moments. This is one of those awkward moments. We have to press through the awkwardness. Let me say this again. Nancy Jo Sales, in her investigation of the troubling phenomenon of teen girls and social media use, found that unsolicited nude selfies from boys in texts often is a first step of a boy showing interest in a girl. In an article published in a major newspaper titled "Teenagers Stop Asking for Nude Photos," this is in the New York Times headline, "Teenagers Stop Asking for Nude Photos." Psychologist Lisa Damore said in a study of 500 girls 12 to 18, over two-thirds of them had been asked for explicit images of themselves by a boy, by a peer. Quote, the majority described facing intense pressure that often began with promises of affection and discretion in exchange for nude images, before accelerating to persistent requests, anger displays, harassment, and threats. As one research participant explained about being pressured by her boyfriend, quote, My boyfriend pressured me for hours to send him pictures of me naked. I did. Now he threatens to send them out to others if I don't send him even more explicit pictures. The stuff I have to do is unbelievable, and I'm just 14. So why is sexting common among teenagers, trading nude selfies? How did that become a commonplace practice for a boy to show interest in a girl by sending her an unsolicited, unasked for nude picture of himself? It just did. It just got co-opted into the normal sexual behavior of teens in the smartphone age. Those are the kinds of things you have to be aware of as a parent before you give your daughter a smartphone. Now, thankfully, this isn't happening in church circles, right? This doesn't happen among Christians, right? Well, a year ago, I was in Frisco, Texas, presenting this, and I think it was largely a homeschooling church. And after the presentation, I felt like this point was probably, you know, not very relevant to the youth ministry of this church. And as I was leaving, a dad jogged up to me to approach me. He was waiting until everybody else was gone, and he came up to me to say that he and another dad in the church were about to meet for coffee to talk about their teens that were caught exchanging nude photos. And then a few months later, it was made known that a world-renowned apologist for the Christian faith was asking for nude images from women that he knew. It's inside the church. It's inside the church. All that to say, resist the pressure to give your kid a smartphone too soon. And when you do, be on the same page here. Know what some of the trends are. Know what teens are using their smartphones to do. Even the awkward stuff. You have to be aware of what's happening. Because what happens is there's virtually no parental controls over what your child gets texted or sent through, like Snapchat. You're gonna have to be aware of how parental controls work and what they stop and what they don't stop. And we're gonna talk about that in a little bit. But this is even more important, okay? So when your daughter receives an unsolicited image that she didn't ask for, you want her to be prepared for that moment so that she doesn't run away and hide in fear of what are mom and dad gonna do if they find out what just came to my phone, okay? So you have to have these open, awkward conversation of what happens when a peer sends a nude selfie to your child. What do? You don't want your daughter running away in shame and silence. Don't make it that simple. So if you give your kid a smartphone, you bear some consequences for this decision. You allow your teen access to things that you need to be aware of, okay? And this is where conversations in the local church are really important. Just parents talking to parents. What's happening? How are teenagers using phones today? Don't allow your teen to slink back in shame when things like this happen. Be aware of the temptation of what you're handing them with a smartphone, and be on the same page and work on this together. Have a few of these awkward conversations early on when you give them a smartphone. But I've gotten way ahead of myself because for the next few minutes, I want to go back and really talk about parenting of young kids. So starting from zero and working up through those early years and how much digital media should they have and tablets and online games and things like that. So this leads to practical tip number three is inside the home, moderate the Wi-Fi. Inside the home, have control over the Wi-Fi. Yeah, you'll see why this is really important in a minute. In our home, the default was pretty much to keep the Wi-Fi off until the Wi-Fi was needed, especially before kids were using Google searches for school projects. The Wi-Fi was just off unless they needed it for something. And so that was just one way that we kept an eye on how much Wi-Fi was being used by our kids. I've been impressed with a device called the Circle device. It sits at home by our router, and it gives me all sorts of controls to cut the Wi-Fi off entirely or to cut off Wi-Fi to a specific device. You can set up content filters, time limits, bedtimes, breaks a Wi-Fi connection if there's anything that's deemed inappropriate. So instead of necessarily setting up parental controls on every device in your home, while you have Wi-Fi only, you haven't given your kid a smartphone yet, it's just Wi-Fi only in the home, you can control that flow of data to every device in the home pretty easily. In fact, from my phone right now, I could pause any device in the home. Like if I got a text from mom, like somebody's acting up, like we can hit pause on the YouTube on a certain device real quick, you know? And YouTube will not work on that given iPad that one of our children has. And so you can do that with all the devices in your home using the Circle device. I would encourage you to check it out. Even if you don't go with a Circle device, think of hardware. And some of your routers are going to have parental controls already built in to them. So get familiar with what you already have at home. I wrote a whole review of the Circle device. If you want to read more about the features, you can find that online. Just Google my name and Circle device, and you'll find it. I wrote that back in 2016. So some of the features are outdated, but you'll get a sense of kind of how you can use a router like that or a device like that with your router in your home to cut Wi-Fi access to different devices. We found it very helpful, very useful. All right, number four. Outside of the home, connect without smartphones as long as you can. Outside of the home, connect without smartphones as long as you can. I know your parent, your kids are going to hate to hear this, but there are some options on how to do this. Connecting with them without smartphones. Parents want phone technology to basically deliver four things, right? We want to call our kids whenever. We want our kids to be able to call us whenever. And we need to text each other. And we want a GPS beacon on them so we know where the rascals are at all the time, right? So we want those four things, right? We want to be able to call them call us, be able to text, and see where they're at with GPS. Now, you don't need a smartphone for that. You don't need a smartphone to do those four things. Ask your mobile carrier for the latest options that meet those criteria. For 5 to 10-year-olds, consider something like the Verizon Gizmo Watch. It was something that we used. It was really useful. The Gizmo is like basically a smartwatch with a speakerphone that can receive calls from 6 phone numbers and can also be used to call 6 phone numbers. Has a GPS locator built in for the parents to see, you know, via an app of where the kid was at. So that was really helpful. An even better option and more options on the market now are coming out from Gab Wireless, G-A-B-B Wireless, gabwireless.com. They also have a smartwatch for kids and a limited-use smartphone with all 4 of the features that I mentioned. Gab Wireless. It's worth checking out. And if you're an Apple family, as the Apple Watch has gotten cheaper and cheaper, there's ways to actually hack an Apple Watch and use it to the same effect. You can Google this. Just Google Apple Watch family setup. Apple Watch family setup. So if you're an Apple family, you can pair a cheap Apple Watch with maybe a phone that you don't use, but you keep the phone and the child has the watch. Really slick way to do it. So if you're a little bit techie, if you can kind of work your way through an Apple Watch setup like that, it's worth looking at that. Apple Watch family setup. But here's the thing. Carriers make their billions off of phone data, okay? So data-constricted phones of any kind are contrary to the carrier's interests. So it's not easy to find carriers with solutions, but keep looking. They're out there. You will find them. So list the functions that you need and then research the dumbest version of that that you can give your kids first as an entry point before you just hand them a smartphone. If you must use a smartphone, make it as dumb as possible. Okay, set up all the parental controls. We are an Apple family, and there are some great tutorials on YouTube. Again, love YouTube, right? How to set up parental controls on iPhone, iPad, MacBook, et cetera, whatever, even Android. So whatever device you have, just go to YouTube. How do I set up parental controls on this device? And you're going to find a lot of help there. But as technologies change and teens use different apps for different purposes, we parents will need to rely on one another in the local church for wisdom, okay? And so I'm hoping what happens tonight is that I start a conversation here, or maybe the conversation's already been happening and I'm just fanning the flames of that conversation. But what we need in each local church is parents who are having a conversation about what are kids doing with their smartphones, what's some good ways to get around just handing a smartphone, what technologies are out there, what kind of parental controls are out there. That needs to be an ongoing conversation within our churches, within our small groups, okay? And The beauty is that in every local church that I've been to, there's some mom or dad who's like a coder or someone who works in the digital space, and they can dumbify anything really well. Find those people, okay, and pick their brains on how they've done a setup for their own kids, because it can be really intimidating, right, for most parents who don't know how to set up a phone and parental controls and things like that. There's people in your local church who have mastered it, I guarantee. So find those people, have them over for dinner, feed them well, and just pick their brain. Point number five, stair-step technology over the years. Stair-step technology over the years. The smartphone is a culmination of every communications technology a child has been introduced to from birth. That's how we thought of technology in our home. To be given a smartphone is a graduation. It's a graduation point. I'll explain that in just a second as well. But here's one way to outline these steps. Once you take control over the home's Wi-Fi, that's really important. You've got control of the Wi-Fi, you can cut it off, you can stop it to any device. No kid has a smartphone yet. Once you have that, you can introduce technology to your kids inside of your home by stair-stepping it. Okay, so what my wife and I did with each of our kids is we took a sheet of paper and we put 0 in the top left corner, age 0, and age 18 in the top right corner, and then we stair-stepped the technology that we were going to introduce to our kids over the years. So left to right, this is your child's first 18 years with technology. This is all ideal. You're just kind of a general framework of how you want to do it. And what we would do is we would draw these stairs diagonally from the bottom left corner to the top right. So at some point, we introduced a tablet with coloring apps to our kids, our young kids. Here's a tablet. It's not connected to Wi-Fi. It's just got coloring games. Here, play with it. I think age 3 was for one of our kids that they were using that. Sometimes it can be earlier. You're deciding what age is appropriate for your kid. One step up. Then you introduce a tablet with educational videos, maybe age 5, age 4. That's another step up. Now they're watching videos on a tablet. At some point, you introduce a family computer, maybe in the living room for writing projects. They get older. For us, it was age 8, I think. I mean, that was everybody in 2020, all right? But if you do online schooling, this will get moved up maybe. You know, you're going to move it up based on your needs for online school. But there, that, again, is a step up. So you've now introduced a computer into your child's life. Then you introduce maybe a speakerphone or smartwatch, maybe a simple flip phone, a dumb phone. That's another step up. You're adding that into their lives. Maybe you introduce YouTube at some age, step up. Maybe you allow Google searches on the computer at some age. You know, what age is that you're going to allow your child to use parentally controlled Google searching for school? Step up. Then perhaps at some point you introduce Facebook or a Messenger app so they can stay in touch with family and friends. That's a step up. Then maybe they have their own iPad. Step up. And then comes the capstone. The capstone is the smartphone. Smartphone is a graduation. What age that is, 13, 14, 15, 16, 32, 40, I don't know what age that should be. You're gonna watch your child how they interact with technology over the years. How addictive are these devices to them? How much of an idol do they become? And you're stair-stepping that. You're careful with each child to introduce things. And you can stair-step back too if you need to. But at one point, then you can draw a dark line. Once you introduce mobile web, you're largely introducing things to your child they've never had access to, being able to search the web remotely, okay? You have less control now. So before they have a smartphone, you've got control over the Wi-Fi at home, very easy to control. Once they have a smartphone, unless you've got that thing dumbified, you've got the parental controls figured out, you're introducing them to things that you have to be on the same page with, like nude selfies, okay? So the advantages to this are twofold. Number one, you can accordion out the steps as needed while also showing your child where the smartphone fits into the digital trajectory, okay? As he or she proves reliable and wise on Wi-Fi at home, he or she is stepping towards mobile web outside the home, okay? Being faithful in small things, leads to being given responsibility in larger things, right? This is a biblical principle that we teach our kids. And a lapse in maturity can lead to a step back. A step back. Number two, it also reminds parents that once you give your child a smartphone with mobile data, you move from having a strong parental control over your child's internet experience to having much less, much less. So keep that bold line clear in view. Home Wi-Fi, easy to control. Smartphone, mobile web, much less easy to control. So you're giving them a lot of responsibility and you've been building up to that moment, okay? When you're ready to take that step, it's a huge graduation, okay? Now let's think through this graduation for, in a few different ways. Point number six, consider not buying a teen their own phone. Consider not buying a teen their own phone. Instead of giving a teen their own phone, quote unquote, we find it's much better to speak of the smartphone in terms of a loan in the form of an experiment. The phone is purchased by, owned by, and all monthly expenses are paid for by mom and dad. Hence, it's mom and dad's phone. Okay, this arrangement is made clear from the outset. The phone is and will remain mom and dad's phone. You can buy a wonderful, special, personalized case for it. That's great. What's inside that case is owned by mom and dad, and we are engaging in an experiment called having a smartphone. And that smartphone is dad's. Yeah, we found that very helpful. Point number seven, write out a smartphone contract. Write out a smartphone contract. Since the smartphone is an open experiment to test teen maturity and responsibility, mom and dad can set very clear expectations in writing, in a contract that covers a few baseline expectations for content, for apps, for personal behavior, and for family engagement. Okay. Smartphone contract can make certain expectations clear, right? Like in the smartphone contract that we have with our kids, it says, this phone is to be charged in mom and dad's room from 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. Phones never stay in the room overnight. This phone is not to be jailbroken or hacked to bypass parental controls. One child who's a very proficient hacker. That's why I was included there. This phone is for limited apps and no new apps will be added without parental approval. Something Apple makes very easy to do on their devices. If a child wants to add an app to their iPhone or iPad, it needs parental approval. It's very easy to set that up. And once a week, we look at screen time stats together. On Sunday after church, usually, we bring our devices together and we look at how many tens of hours were spent on YouTube this week, how many hundreds of hours were spent on Facebook this week, and we go through, mom and dad too, we pull out our devices, we look at screen time, and we get a sense of kind of how much time we're spending online. This is good for mom and dad too to be in that discussion. Okay, so things like that are helpful when considering violations of an agreement like this. You can set consequences out very clearly. For example, on first violation, dad takes back his phone for a week. On the second violation, dad takes back his phone and deactivates it for a month. You can do that. Okay, if you're paying for the phone contract, you can deactivate the phone as a parent. And on the third violation, dad takes back his phone and the smartphone experiment comes to a halt. And experiment is the key word, okay? We're conducting a trial here. We are in an experiment to see if our teen is mature enough for such a powerful technology, okay? This is where parenting wisdom has to come into play, right? This contract is not a demand for perfect digital perfectionism. It's not what mom and dad are looking for, digital perfectionism. No, it's intended to set fair and reasonable expectations to create a space for our kids to learn and grow and mature in responsibility for using such a potent technology. It's a lifelong skill they're gonna have to learn to use not only with smartphones, but all these other technologies that are coming our way very quickly. The contract is in place for a teen to demonstrate growth in responsibility. It's an opportunity. And when that growth stops, the phone experiment is over. Number eight, lead with the future. Lead with the future. How do we encourage our kids that being set apart or different from their friends is a good thing? When all the other kids seem to have phones at very early ages, this is, I think, one of the key challenges of parenting. And this gets into this challenge of coming up with a compelling vision for their life. What does God have in store for them? We have to envision our kids for a life that's more compelling than the day-by-day pure drama that they're engaged with online. Guess which college students have the healthiest smartphone habits? There's been studies on this done. That the college students with the healthiest smartphone habits always come down to pre-law and pre-med majors. These are consistently the people with the most healthy smartphone habits. And the reason why becomes pretty obvious. They are aiming at huge goals. You want to go into law, you want to go into medicine. These are massive goals that loom ahead. This is all-encompassing. It demands all of your time and attention. Therefore, it deprioritizes social media in your life. You're just not going to be as addicted, right? And there's a bigger lesson here for all parents to learn, because a lack of purpose is a huge culprit to smartphone abuse. A lack of purpose is a huge culprit to smartphone abuse. This is what I found in my own life as I was writing the book. So we must parent that much harder. What are our kids living for? As soon as our kids entered into high school, once they were freshmen in high school, we were trying to get them on major college campuses to dream together for the top colleges and the universities. We were buying them swag to wear to high school so that when they showed up as a high school freshman, they already had college swag on, right? They were already thinking about 4 years ahead. They were thinking about what's ahead. Envision your kids for something bigger than the pure drama that they face day in and day out. And that's hard. That's really, really hard. And you're going to have to envision them for a career. You're going to have to envision them for what God has ahead for them in a compelling way. High school is a stepping stone for something else. So don't get lost in high school and peers and Snapchat streaks and TikTok and the latest popular apps. Get their eyes up and on a bigger goal that's exciting, that's full of career possibility ahead. Envision them for what God may have for them in the future. This, dads, I think, is one of the key roles that we play, is envisioning our kids for what God has in store in the future. Here's what I know about every parent and child that's represented here in this room tonight. God made you, he made you, he claims you, and he designed your life and my life for two core priorities. You can boil down our purpose on this earth into two categories. Yes, two categories. Number one, we were created to treasure Christ above all else. Everything else and everyone else. Treasure Christ above everything else. And number two, out of your delight in him, pour out yourself in Christ-like love to meet needs in others. Okay? That's what it means to flourish as a human being. It comes down to those two things. Treasure Christ above all else, and out of your love for him, pour out your life to serve legitimate, tangible needs in others. This is the heart of parenting, envisioning our kids for a life of purpose, those two purposes specifically. And healthy smartphone habits are nearly impossible. They will be impossible for anyone who lacks vision and purpose. The fight against smartphone abuse isn't just about willpower, it's about vision, leading with the future. YouTube is a great place to learn new skills. I've mentioned YouTube several times already. YouTube is a great platform that foregrounds hobbies, you know? There are people online making millions of dollars living out their hobby dreams. You notice that? You know, it's like, yeah, I want to do trick shots and be a millionaire. Wouldn't that be fun? Like, yeah, pulling off pranks and being a, yeah, wouldn't that be a fun life? Now, the problem is, and two of my kids have really been addicted to YouTube, you know, YouTube videos, that's been their thing. And the more a teen watches YouTube, hobbies are being foregrounded and life becomes all about hobbies, right? Let's make life about hobbies, 24/7 hobbies. Not about calling. Now, some of these YouTubers are called by God to do what they do. But parents have to help resist this and say, okay, son, daughter, your life probably isn't going to be monetized by doing pranks and trick shots, okay? Hobbies are not your calling. I was making this point at that church in Frisco, and at one point I was shaking my head, just, you know, my youngest son will watch Dude Perfect videos every video 5 times, and the church just an uproar. I mean, it's got such a response. I was like, that's weird. It's a strong response, mentioned Dude Perfect, and everybody started to laugh. And so there was like a pause as I was trying to process that. And then there was an awkward moment where the pastor in front of the church, who was sitting right over here, he said, "Hey, Tony, look right behind me." And I looked right behind him, and one of the Dude Perfect guys is sitting in row 2 of the church in the parenting seminar. It's like, oh my. So I quickly backed my way out of that. I was the last person in on the joke. It was hilarious. And the place went crazy. But I love Dude Perfect, and hobbies are great, but Dude Perfect is a great example of how YouTube foregrounds hobbies. As parents, we foreground a vision, a calling that God may have for their lives. And that's fulfilling that second calling of fulfilling legitimate, tangible needs in the lives of others. Okay? That would include a full-time stay-at-home mother. That would include a missionary. That would include a preacher. That would include an engineer. That would include a rocket scientist. That would include surgeons. That would include doctors. That would include accountants. That would include lawyers. That number 2 category of fulfilling and meeting legitimate needs in people is all expansive, right? It covers so many vocations. All right, point number 9, keep building the church. Keep building the church. The stats are in. iGen is now the loneliest generation in America, lonelier than the 72-plus demographic. Okay? The 72-plus demographic has always been the loneliest generation. Okay? We all know we should spend more time with our grandparents, right? And we feel guilty for not spending more time with our grandparents. 72-plus has always been historically the most lonely generation. iGen is now the most lonely generation in America. And these two demographics, iGen and 72-plus, have been digitally partitioned from one another. I recently spoke at a local church. I was talking about smartphone overuse and, what's at the heart of our worst habits. And the message was, uber relevant. It was, I was going to talk about Snapchat streaks and TikTok and Instagram. And I walk into this church, and it's like 2/3 gray heads. It's like mostly grandparents. And I'm like, oh, this is bad. I totally miscalculated what I should be preaching here. And so it's like, okay, I'm going to preach. I'm going to do my thing. The Lord, I think, led me to this message. The meeting ends. I wait around, and I get swarmed by these gray heads. I get swarmed by these grandparents. Why? One after another compelled to lament to me how hard it is to reach their grandkids. Few bear the brunt of social media abuse of tweens and teens like grandparents do. Okay? Snapchat, TikTok, Instagram, those are the platforms most grandparents are not on. Online, they seem fenced off from the grandkids, and when they're together in person, those grandkids are glued to their screens, right? We must reclaim face-to-face relationships. And the church is huge in this capacity. One study showed that 80% of the questions a son would ask his dad about, things like how do I change a flat tire, or how do I fix a bicycle chain, or how do I ask a girl out on a date, those kinds of questions, 80% of those questions now go directly from a son into Google or YouTube. Okay? Teens don't need parents in that sense, or grandparents for that matter. There's a ready digital response for every possible question our kids have. So multi-generational discipleship, passing from an older generation to a younger generation, wisdom and answers has largely evaporated in culture. And I think that's what's unique in human history and in the modern history of parenting. iGeners, like their parents, need a community of faith where they can thrive, a place to serve, to be served, to find friends, and to be envisioned for risk-taking mission, and all within a multi-generational context. The church is and remains absolutely essential in the digital age. You can't replace it. 10, and finally, focus on the affections. Focus on the affections. We kind of started out talking about the affections. Focus on the affections. I know many of you wish we had this conversation years ago, right? I know exactly what happens at the end of an address like this. The parents with really small kids are thrilled, and they have a vision of the future and a list of suggestions and a game plan to put in place, right? And the parents with older kids who may have given their teen a smartphone too soon are crushed with regret. Happens in every setting. Condemnation very quickly floods over a parent. Mistakes were made, mistakes that are not easily fixed now. Some of you have digital prodigals. Teens who are using screens to stuff themselves with the idols of the world, and you desperately need answers. Here's what I've learned over the years. Loads of Christians want me to boil down technology ethics into blanket prohibitions, right? The Apostle Paul felt this too in the New Testament age, the pressure to boil ethics down into slogans: do not handle, do not taste, do not touch. Just tell me what's sinful, I won't touch it. And by not touching it, I'll be virtuous, right? Wouldn't that be easy? Wouldn't that be simple? Well, that's not how Christian ethics work. Not touching a smartphone does not make you more holy. Not downloading TikTok does not make you more righteous. It doesn't work that way. The question always returns to the heart. What are you after? What are you going for? Heart ethics are hard because there are no shortcuts. There's no easy slap-on prohibitions about what you can or cannot touch. So the fact remains this. Parenting in the digital age is scary. It is scary. Parenting is intimidating work because the work changes from legislating behaviors early on to discipling appetites in the teen years. And of course, you can't legislate desires. So I often get asked, is parenting in the digital age more dangerous or perilous than parenting in past generations? The answer to that question is no, not necessarily more dangerous. It's clear from Jesus' own words in the parable of the soil. This world has always found ways to choke out God's word from thriving in the human soul. It's always been true. The world is always going to offer us and our kids vanities that compete with our love for Christ. That was true 2,000 years before Instagram. And that's what makes parenting hard. One of the central goals of the gospel, one of the main keys to sanctification, to holiness, and the heart of parenting is this glorious truth. God is pushing out of our lives every desire that gets in the way of our eternal joy in Him. God is pushing out of our lives every desire that gets in the way of our greater joy in Him. The tension and anxieties that parents feel in the pit of their stomach in the digital age comes from the realization that we are waging an all-out war for the affections of our kids by the power of the Holy Spirit. This is not a futile battle. It is not futile at all. Not with the grace of the Father, by the power of the Son and through the blood, the power of the Spirit and the blood of the Son. The Trinity, triune God, gives us the grace, gives the resources to parent. The gospel was made for the digital age. It really was. To close, let me say this. The digital age is a threat to lazy parenting. That's what I felt when I first started putting this list together and thinking about parenting. It is a threat to lazy parenting. Many parents are scared of the digital age because the digital age exposes lazy parenting. You can't get by with lazy parenting in the digital age. And if you like postponing hard conversations, the digital age is not going to be very fun for you. It is because honestly, who loves talking to their kids about pornography and nude selfies and self-glory and peer pressure and anxiety and depression and isolation and loneliness? Those aren't fun conversations. And yet, if you want to parent in the digital age, your passivity must die. And it can die right now. You can die to the idol of comfort. Die to turning a blind eye to what your teen does on the phone. Kids are being spiritually strangled by the lies of Satan because we parents too often think it's okay to be comfortably ignorant. With that said, smartphones don't give our teens new desires. They simply amplify the desires resident within themselves already. Okay, and this is what makes me so hopeful. And this is actually the fun part of parenting teens, if I can say that. There is a fun part about parenting teens. When your kids are small, it's all about yes and no, black and white discipline, obedience to authority, and then they grow into young adults. And they start getting a better read on themselves and their own hearts and what is it that makes them tick. What is it that they want? What drives me? What do I want more than anything else in the world? And parents are huge here in coming alongside your kid. The smartphone is simply a black mirror that represents back into my eyes, reflects back into my eyes in pixels, the very deepest longings and loves of my own heart. The smartphone is a black mirror that reflects back to my eyes in pixels the very deepest longings and loves of my heart. If that's pornography, that's what you'll find. If it's peer approval, that's what you'll find. We can tell our teens, even when no one is watching, when you look at your screen, you are making eye contact with the deepest cravings of your heart, pixelized before your eyes. That's what makes the digital age kind of haunting. This little thing exposes what's inside of me. So 2021 is a great opportunity to take the interrogation of Isaiah 55 and apply it to our screens. Why do you spend your attention on that which is not bread and gaze at a screen for something that will never satisfy you? It's the question for mom, dad, son, and daughter. That's the mantra of parenting teens. You can snap 1,000 throwaway selfies every day and get a little buzz by grabbing the attention of your peers, and then you wake up in the morning with a dehydrated soul that doesn't know what else to do than to turn again for the sugar buzz hit immediately in the morning by doing the same thing over again. You're looking for your life, and it's costing you your life. So there isn't a greater privilege than to help our kids know their own hearts, to unmask the desires inside of them, to expose idols, false promises that don't deliver, and to bring our teens back to God, who wants to fill their lives with a joy that is unspeakably greater than the vanities that they are so often attracted to in their phones. Let's pray. Father, thank you for tonight. We are desperate parents. We want to be godly stewards of these eternal souls that you have entrusted to us. And yet our children have never been more porous to lives, to the lies of the world, never more given ways to satisfy their own curiosities and sinful longings than in this digital age. We feel this. If we grow lazy, our kids will be unnecessarily exposed. So much is at stake. We know it. That's why we're here in faith, desperate for your help. So guide us, make us discerning. May the teens that are here tonight respect and honor their parents for being here, not scoff at them, but love them more for their concern. Help us to not lose faith in raising digital prodigals, which can be so painful. Help us not to exasperate our children. You love our kids more than we love our kids. So our aim is not to raise self-righteous kids. Our aim is to raise kids who love Christ. And we need you for that. We don't trust in filters and parental controls. We trust in you alone. All of us have sinned digitally and turned to screens to fill what only you can give us. We are all in need of Christ and forgiveness. So thank you for not leaving us and our kids trapped hopeless to this world. Thank you for giving us the soul-ravishing treasure beyond what this world can offer. May we, in all of our parenting, point our kids back time and time again to the greatest beauty in the universe, the beauty of your beloved Son, Jesus Christ, in whose blood and in whose name we pray right now. Amen.